It is my favorite time of the year. Not only is it starting to be not winter here in Nova Scotia, it is also the return of us being able to see the Milky Way galactic center pretty much everywhere where you can normally see it. And that means there's so many opportunities and things that maybe I didn't get done last year that now I can plan out this year. And if you have on your bucket list this year to take your first photo of the Milky Way, this episode is for you.
Hi, I'm Christine Riche, an artist and mentor to photographers around the world. Consider me your interstellar guide on the path to being a better nightscape photographer. In this podcast, we will bring together our artistic right brain and technical left brain by exploring creativity, art, and inspiration in photography, as well as diving into technique, gear, and strategy necessary to elevate your craft and photographic practice. I am so happy to be a part of your Milky Way journey. This is the After Dark Photography Podcast.
Welcome. Thanks for being here. It really is a good time of year. March, for me, definitely is kind of a bit of a turning point. You know, Canada is great in a lot of ways. Nova Scotia is an amazing place to live, but February is a hard one. It's a hard one to get through. But we're here, and it's March, if you're listening with this when it's come out around and abouts. And that means that my brain is now shifting out of the semi-hibernation mode that it's been in, if it ever truly gets to that point. And it's looking towards what I'm going to be shooting and creating this year. And for pretty much all of us who have access to seeing the Milky Way core at night, this is now the time when we can see it again. So before the sun rises in the morning, we've got the Milky Way up in the sky, and then it starts to get fainter and fainter as the sunlight comes in. But that's okay, because we know we're just getting set up for a beautiful season. And I wanted to start the start of the season on the podcast here with a little bit of an intro back into it. And this will be good for anyone who is just getting started with Milky Way photography, and anyone who maybe feels like, oh, I haven't done a whole heck of a lot over the past few months, whether it's been winter here in the Northern Hemisphere, or whether you're coming from the Southern Hemisphere and you're just like, ah, it's been sunny and I've been swimming and having Christmas and all the things. So this episode is to help kind of get our brains back into the frame of mind that we need them to be in. If you're brand new, I'm going to kind of outline the overview, and I will also sometimes recommend some other podcast episodes as well, because there's lots of other episodes on the podcast where I've gone over a lot of technical things or composition, lighting, all kinds of different topics, really, when I look back over the last 50 plus episodes. Today is starting with an overview. And really, when we're looking to get out under the night sky and shoot, there is a lot that we can do before we actually get out there. I generally don't recommend that you just grab your camera, drive somewhere where you think it's dark, and point up, because that tends to be a recipe for disaster. Yeah. Or not disaster, just like a lot of frustration and failure, which is not to say that we're not going to have either of those things. We will, but that helps us learn and get better each time. However, we can be prepared. So the first step in all of this is really learning the basics. So it's getting down, where do we go? What time do we look? When do we see the Milky Way in the sky? What are the settings? And then further that, you don't need this to start, but this will be something that will help make you happier with your images, is learning about how to edit and how to pull out the most that we have inside of our images. Those are going to be the pieces that we should look at having, if not a solid handle on, at least an idea of those things before we dive into this and get started. Now, I am going to give a shameless plug at this moment because that's what I do in my training, which is called Your First Milky Way Photo. I will be doing that at the start of April. I'm going to be doing it once only this year. It's a completely free training. I've brought thousands and thousands, actually tens of thousands of photographers through it at this point, and it's really, really special. I won't take your time up with all of that now, but it is a fantastic way to learn. So highly recommend. If you are 100% brand new to this, please come to that training. I would love to have you there. If you are on afterdarkphotographypodcast.com, you can see in the show notes, there's a link to get signed up for the waitlist so that when we open registration, you can do that. Okay, this is where I give you a few other podcasts to go and listen to after, just to get you set up if you're like, but I don't know anything about editing or settings or any of that. If you are needing help with your gear and what gear should I buy, that's going to be episode 37. If you need help with your camera and your settings and shooting, I'm going to recommend episodes 42 through 45. So 42, 43, 44, 45. And let's just say you can listen to these podcasts when you're going for a walk, when you're commuting, when you're doing laundry, when you're washing the dishes, all of these things, right? So it's easy to just pop in an earbud and listen to these. It will really, really help you. Then also, I'm going to recommend episode 38. That's on how to be a Milky Way master. And that takes you through kind of all of the different steps of where this journey will start and end. Not really an end, but potential of where it could be. Then the other ones that I would recommend listening to, episode 2 is on how night photography is different. And episode 19 is on editing. And episode 20 is too, is an editing one. So those are the ones that I would recommend you listen to in addition to this. But just know you don't have to listen to absolutely all of those to get it. Go and look at the ones and read my little blurbs that I put in there. I tried to give an overview of what it's about, and it will just help you kind of expand on some of the technical pieces that, since I've already gone through them, I'm not going to go in depth with in this podcast episode. You don't need to stop now, though. You can stay here with me. You don't need to stop now and go listen to those, because we're going to talk about some other ideas that will bring everything together and give you a really good perspective on getting started. Now, in episode 38 that I just mentioned, I go through this idea of the different stages on how to end up being a Milky Way master. That's what I have as like the top tier. And we go through starting as a beginner. And then we go to an enthusiast level, then intermediate, then advanced, then master. And the idea here is to have goals and to have a little bit of a map as how we actually get to those goals. And I tend to be very analytical in some ways. Sure, I'm a pretty creative person, I would say, but I'm also very analytical. And for me, I find it helps to know and have these touch points along the way and to have an idea of like, okay, these are the things that I need to pay attention to, and to also just have a really frank and non-judgmental viewpoint of where I am at on different things. So I might be intermediate in some things, I might be advanced in other things, and enthusiast in others. There's all these different levels that we can be at. So in episode 38, I go into it more in depth, but basically I have key metrics for seeing where you're at. And it's starting with our technical skills. And really, I'm going to run down here. There's five things. These five things are all of the things that wrapped up create those images that make you stop and go like, oh, whoa, right? Oh, that's a good photo. These are the five things that all come in together. And we work on these different things at different points and in different ways. So the first of them is technical skills. And this is knowing our camera, knowing our settings, understanding all of the settings that we need to know on our camera, knowing why we use specific ones, knowing how to troubleshoot, understanding underneath of the settings so we can start to push them potentially. Then next is sky knowledge. And this is not something we're going to need in most other genres of photography, I would have to say. But we have to learn about the night sky, and we have to start to become amateur astronomers in a way. I didn't know anything about astronomy before I got into this. Literally nothing. I thought that the moon rose when it was night and then it set in the morning. Now, if I had actually dug into that, I've been like, oh, but I've seen the moon up in the middle of the day. But it wasn't the thing that I ever thought about it or understood. So I definitely had a large learning curve with sky knowledge starting out. But it is just like any other photography genre in that, you know, if we are interested in photographing race cars, well, we're going to have to learn a lot about race cars. We're going to have to know about the differences in the types of cars. We're going to have to understand all of these nuanced things that I honestly can't talk about because I don't really know much about race cars. Well, yeah, I took my kids to a monster truck rally. It was really hot and loud, but they kind of liked it. Any very niche genre of photography means that you have to learn about that subject and know about that subject. And depending on the subject, it might be something that you have enjoyed in general before, but never really dug into the important pieces about it. It's the same with Milky Way photography. Just so happens that we need to get into some of the science, which frankly, I think is super fun. The next key metric is post-processing. And this is, you know, the technical skills let us take the photo. The sky knowledge lets us be out at the right time and pointing in the right direction to take the photo. The post-processing is the thing that lets us actually translate the experience into something that visually resonates. Post-processing is, for me, very much a translation exercise where we are taking the original data, the original images that we have captured, and we are using the software in order to translate it into something that will visually speak to what we were trying to create, to the idea, to the feeling, to the emotion, to the experience, to whatever it is that you're trying to do. Post-processing now is done on the computer and is fantastic, and we can do an insane amount of stuff. But there are some purists out there who are like, I don't need to do that. And it's like, well, actually, you know, the darkroom had a lot of post-processing as well. I mean, that came in when you were going and actually developing the film. Did you push it? Did you pull it? What were you doing with the film? And then when you're actually exposing the negative, in what way are you exposing the negative? Are you burning? Are you dodging afterwards? Are you spot toning? Like, what kind of things are you doing to it? Are you putting multiple negatives together? I knew people who did that. All of these things, right? So it existed before. It just exists now in a different way. And with night photography, it's in a way that we can pull out this data and detail that exists, is real. Our eyes just don't get to see it in that way. So it gives us a different way to experience the world, which is so freaking cool. Like, I'm actually getting goosebumps talking about it. And it's not just because it's cold. It's still cold here, but I get super excited about it. Super excited. So that's post-processing. And with post-processing, it can run the gamut. You know, the first step in post-processing is learning how to adjust our contrast and our white balance and any luminosity issues that might be in the image, and potentially adjusting certain parts of the image different from others. So in the Photoshop and the post-processing episodes that I do, episode 19 and 20, I'll talk about that a little bit. This idea that when we edit the sky different from the foreground. Because if we think about it, our camera is just collecting photons. It's just collecting light that is coming in and hitting the sensor. But that light from the stars is coming from way, way farther away than the light from the foreground. So we need to add more contrast back into the sky and less into the foreground. That's the starting point with post-processing. From there, we can go crazy. There's all kinds of things that we can do. You know, we can be doing tracked shots for the sky and then stationary shots for the foreground. Maybe we're focus stalking. Maybe we're taking during blue hour. Maybe we're doing a multi-level panorama. All kinds of things that we can do that then we can put together in post-processing. Our fourth is creative composition. This is a fourth metric that I look at. And really, these first three things, you gotta have them. So technical skills, sky knowledge, and post-processing. We need those in order to start to actually create the image and to get something that we can show people. And when we're first starting out, you know, it might just be a tree line that's silhouetted with the Milky Way, but the Milky Way's in focus. We've got the correct white balance. We've got contrast in it. And it's like, heck yes, that is a big deal. A big deal. Yes. Then from there, we start to think about more about what we're going to do. And that is where the creative composition comes into play. And that is when we start to think about the ideas that we want to communicate. There's going to be more on that in the next episode that I do. I don't want to give anything away, but there will be more on that. We're also going to start to think about the different ways that we can utilize the technical skills to bring the best out of the composition that we are using, that, or maybe not using, we're not using anything, that we are experiencing, that we have at our disposal. And we can start to come up with more creative ways to communicate more effectively. That's me, like composition to me is just communication. That's what composition is. It is being able to effectively communicate my ideas visually by having a visual structure within my image. That's composition. And then our last key metric, I've left this one last because it's not saving the best for last. It's saving, it's like, yeah, this is a thing that we have to think about, but it's not the be all end all. And it's funny because most people start with this, but it's gear and accessories. Gear and accessories, There is a like gate to get in to this type of photography. If you don't have the right gear to start, and it's not crazy, the gear that you need is not super, super crazy. Episode 37 goes into this more in depth, but you know, basically a digital SLR that can get up to ISO 6400, 3200, it's pushing it, but you could do it. A tripod and then a wide-ish angle lens. That's all you need to get started. Literally, that's it. However, as we get more gear and better gear, we are able to create different images. It's just the long and short of it. You know, we can talk about different gear, all of the things that we could have. Different things actually have different physical capabilities. Therefore, we can create different images with them. However, it's not like you have to have the top of the line gear to move up, you know, to go from that beginner to an advanced or master Milky Way photographer. You don't have to have top of the level gear. At a certain point, it's also about knowing how to maximize the gear that you have to create the image that you want to create. So, you know, I'm always here for helping people spend money on gear. There's a reason my students gave me the hashtag Christine the Enabler. I think it's just because they want to buy more gear themselves. But you know what? If they need to put that on the back of someone else, I got a strong back. I carry kids around all day. They're way too big for me to be carrying them anymore. But I do it anyways. So I can take it. If people want to say, wow, Christine said I need this. Whatever you need. If you have another person in your life that you know, share household expenses and things with, they might not like me so much, but that's okay. I can take that too. Let's just, you know, if we meet in person, you just make sure that you protect me a little bit from them. So that actually takes me into this idea, because there are things that will stop us from getting out there and shooting. One of those things is that you don't need that top of the line equipment. I cannot tell you. Like, I can't actually go into the sheer volume of people who have said to me in my free training, the Your First Milky Way Photo training, like, I never knew I could do this with my camera. My camera's like 10 years old. I didn't think I could do this. Like, it's just, it's really astounding. It's really, really astounding. And I have had some very successful students who have come into my full paid Milky Way class who have been shooting and creating these images with really entry-level cameras. They've really pushed their gear for quite some time before they ever looked at upgrading. And there's so much that we can do with having equipment that is not top of the line, is not the best of best of best. In a perfect world, could we all afford that? Yes, absolutely. But the reality is, for many of us, myself included, we start smaller with the gear that we have, and then we add on and add on as we're able to. I know when I first started, when I came out of university, I basically bought a new lens every tax return. That's what I did. And I know a lot of people are like, you should use your taxes and put that into retirement savings and things like that. And I was like, or I could buy a new lens. And that's what I did. And I built up my lenses for the first, you know, five to eight years probably of coming out of university. That's what I did. That's how I built up my gear. I still have those lenses. I still have them. When I incorporated my business, we had to do this. We had to do a thing called a Section 85 rollover, where we took things from my sole proprietorship and put them into the LLC that I created. And my accountant was like, this lens is 12 years old. Like, you don't, it's not, you know, this is not a capital, it's not a capital cost anymore in your business. Like, there's no reason. And I'm like, no, I was like, I actively use this lens all the time. And if I, something happens to it, I'm going to get it repaired. I want the business to do that. I was like, so this needs to be in the business. Anyway, so it was funny because there's multiple lenses that are like, you know, 10 plus years old. And she's like, Christine, like, just keep those for yourself. And I was like, no, like, there's a good reason for them to be in there. So, you know, we can strategically purchase the gear as we're able to do so. And each time that we purchase one of these new things, especially lenses, it's something that if we care for it, we will have it for quite a while. Other things that I see holding people back, one that I hear a lot is like, I don't have anything nice around me. You know, I don't have any nice foregrounds. I don't have any beautiful places. And frankly, I would much rather see your boring road, your boring cornfields, than I would see another picture of the Grand Canyon or another picture at Death Valley or, you know, another picture at Acadia Park. I don't know. I'm just listing, you know, parks and places I see things from all the time, you know, or another beautiful, stunning image from Banff. All of these places are beautiful. I'm sorry, I don't know any of the names of really popular national parks in Australia or New Zealand or places down under, so you'll have to let me know. Send me a DM on Instagram after so I can look them up and I can use those as examples next time. I try to be as inclusive as possible. But why am I saying this? Well, most of these places, yes, they're absolutely stunning. They're awe-inspiring. To go to them, it's just like, holy heck. And we'll see a lot of pictures from them, a lot of pictures. And what I find is people just put the pictures up, and because it was such an awe-inspiring experience for them, they're just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And then they put the picture up and that's it. It's just like, oh, this place was beautiful and so on and so forth. And that's a picture of a place that I've seen before. And it's the type of thing that people are having for the most part. And I generalize, but know that I know this is not always 100% the case. But often people are having more surface level experiences. They can be deep experiences, like they can be transformative and awe-inspiring. But it's different when you're visiting a place than it is a place that you know. And oftentimes those images are presented because the place is this epic location, right? And people will connect to it because it's an epic location. But I myself I tend to get a little bit bored with it. And I don't want to say, I'm not saying your images are boring. I am saying that I would find images that you created of a place that you have a bigger connection with a lot more interesting. The image that is just epic because it's an epic place, it doesn't require the photographer to think more in order to create a beautiful image. Therefore, when they show it to me, the communication with me about the image also doesn't have that deeper meaning in this deeper level. And for me, we live in such a society of there's just so much. You know, it's my job, but I'm consuming images all the time. And I can see stunning image after stunning image after stunning image. But if there's not something being communicated to me from the photographer, and I've got whole other rants that I go on about how I think every photographer should be telling stories with their images and giving us a viewer more. But if it's just, you know, beautiful image after beautiful image after beautiful image, it's not doing that much for me. There's a lot of that already out there. So yes, can we go to these locations? Can we create stunning images and have them just stand on their own as stunning images? Yes, absolutely. Will those be the ones that set us apart? No, I don't think so. And I will go on record here saying that I think all of us as photographers will create more meaningful work when the place that we create the work from has that deeper meaning to us. You know, maybe the Grand Canyon is your place. Maybe that's like, I go there at least once a year. I go there multiple times a year and I have this deep connection. That can be your thing. Absolutely. 100%. And if you live close to the Grand Canyon, I'm a little bit jealous. I don't actually want to live anywhere in the vicinity, but it would be really cool if I could teleport. That'd be pretty awesome. But to have access to a place like that and to be able to go often and have this deep connection would be really, really cool. But a lot of us, that's not the reality. And it doesn't have to be. We don't have to have that access to these stunning places to create images that can be really impactful. I want you to know that you can create images of places that are near and dear to you that are not these large, sweeping, epic vistas. The fact that you have that connection is something that you can then translate into your images, and that will be even more meaningful. And frankly, because not as many people are doing it, in this economy of creation, content creation as like a currency, the fact that you're creating something that's different from what other people are creating also can be a lot more impactful. The other thing that I see a lot, a few more things that I see, is this lament of cloud. Oh, it's always cloudy. It's been so cloudy. It's been cloudy forever. The conditions are so bad here. Ah, wildfire smoke. It's just every night after night after night. That might be true. There are some places, and I've seen my students be like, it is literally the cloudiest that it has been on record. We can't control Mother Nature. Maybe we could be doing our part to lessen climate change. Not going to go down that rant here, but it's a real thing. We don't have direct control over what the sky conditions are going to be. What we do have control over is our ability to be ready to go. So that means being prepared. I know, if you listen to me at any point about talking about Milky Way photography, you will hear me drone on about being prepared, but there's a really good reason for it. If you don't have your gear figured out, if you don't know what you need to shoot with, if you don't have your stuff all in like kind of one place, and I have ADHD, I leave things all over the place very easily, but I have specific places where my camera stuff goes, so I know where everything is. If you don't have that, it's going to be really hard to get ready. If you don't have an idea of places to go, places that you have already researched, places that you know for the time of year that you can go and shoot, places that are easily accessible, places that are maybe less easily accessible, but you have a plan, places that you have scouted in advance. Got a free day? Is cloudy? Go scouting. you can go scouting in the pouring rain. You can go scouting in a blizzard. You know, drive safe. Don't go out in poor conditions. You can go scouting anytime. It doesn't have to be at night. And then you know, and you have the places ready so that, oh, it's a clear night tonight. Yeah, I could go to bed really early and then get up before work. I could get up a few hours before work and go out and shoot. You know, like I can have one night where it's like, you know, if you have kids, after I get the kids in bed, I go to bed too. And then I get up 3 hours earlier than normal and I go out and shoot for a couple hours. I have all my stuff, can be ready, put together quickly. I know exactly where I can go and shoot. Easy. You can make it work. But you don't make it work by complaining about the weather. You make it work by being ready when the conditions are ready for you. And by shifting some things around in your life so that you can do that. You know, I still got out shooting when I had a like 6-month-old baby and a 3.5-year-old kid. And it was COVID and we couldn't go anywhere and I had to be home with the kids all day. Like I still was able to find and make time to get out. There are so many ways that we can do this. If you are saying, I can't, I want you to stop for a moment and just realize that when you're doing that, you're fighting for your limitations. And the more that you say, I can't, the more you tell your head that you can. Instead, say, what could I do? And maybe, you know, I live in the city. It's a far drive out somewhere. And it's hard for me to be able to do that. I live in the city. I have kids and it's a far drive out. Well, do you know someone who lives somewhere that's dark? Can you say to them like, hey, in the next new moon cycle, you might have to explain what that is. And that's okay. They'd be like, are you into astrology? And you'll be like, no, astronomy. It's a little bit different. Maybe both. No judgment here. And then you say to them, you know, if there's a clear night, can my kids and I come? And I'll put the kids down to bed on the couch or on the floor or on your spare bedroom. And I can do a little bit shooting. Would that be okay? You know, there's lots of ways that we can figure things out. Sleep in your car if you need to. If it's somewhere where it's safe and also not freezing cold. I have slept in my car before. I've slept at different people's houses, you know, all kinds of things. So this is my kind of push to you. If it was clear tomorrow night, it's clear, could you get out and shoot? Then maybe you're like, see, I'm listening to this, it's the full moon. Just like, you know, let's put aside all of the things. Could you get out and shoot? What are the roadblocks for you getting out to shoot? Okay, now I want you to say, what if this wasn't a problem? What ways could this be fixed? What ways could I get around this? I just want you to brainstorm on it. We don't magically get answers to anything in life. We get answers when we put the time and effort into it. And maybe it's, well, I don't really have the ability to do it until I go on vacation in 3 months' time. Okay, great. Then you're going to have lots of other things you can do to get ready before that vacation so that you practice and you get your time in and you get used to your camera in the dark. You go out and you practice photographing and gain in focus any star that you can see, you know? Generally, unless you're in the densest of city, you can see at least one or two stars on a clear night. They might just be planets, but that's okay. And we go... In my Milky Way class, we go into this really in depth because we have students in there who like they do live in the city and they only get to shoot when they go on vacation and things like that. That also leads me to what I'll probably say is one of the last. Well, I've got two more. One of the last things that I see people not going out and shooting because they're scared of the dark. I get that. I don't actually love the dark. I don't love it. And also I'm not scared of it. There is an ingrained feeling in me when I look out in the dark and it's this little pull that's there. That's like, go back to the light. Go back to the light. And I push through that. Now, I push through that, but I'm also very prepared. There are inherent risks that come with this type of photography. So you need to be prepared when you are doing this type of photography. And that means a multitude of things. It's different for everyone depending on your circumstances and where you're going. You know, I have students who live on the West Coast, and there are a lot of dangerous two-legged things out there that they have to pay attention to, that like here I'm just like, no, that's not a thing, you know, like I'm more like, ah, bears, coyotes, moose, like what have I got there, you know, exposure those types of things come up a lot more here. So I can't get into this piece too much in depth, but really the dark piece is more so about, again, being prepared, knowing where you're going to shoot, knowing the situation around where you're going to shoot, and being prepared for it. And you'll find that when you are prepared and you have the things that you need, it's a lot easier to do it. Now, my other really, this is like top-notch recommendation for anyone, is that if you're doing that and it's still like, oh, I feel uncomfortable, get another body there with you. Now, that can be a four-legged puppy dog. I love going out with my dog. I can't take her out anymore, unfortunately, because her eyes are not good. And she's recently gone deaf. So her nights out with me are unfortunately no more. But for many years, she was my companion at night. Bring a friend. Drag a friend. Drag a spouse. Drag a kid. Make sure the kid's old enough, of course, not young children. Have another body with you. You will be surprised. As soon as we have someone else out there, it's just like, oh, this is fine. Everything seems fine. So bring a friend, learn together, or just have, you know, I know I have a lot of people who have their spouses come with them, but they just like sit in the car, maybe nap in the car. The last thing as well that I get from a lot of people is like, but I need to know my camera. I'm not ready for this. I don't know my camera well enough yet. Honestly, Milky Way photography, only a few things you really have to know, right? You have to be good with your camera in the dark, know where things are at on your camera, and then you have to understand the interplay between your shutter speed, your aperture, and your ISO, but it's pretty formulaic. You know, like once you get down, it's like, okay, 30 seconds, 2.8, 6400, less on the shutter speed, depending on if I'm getting star trailing, and then up or down on the ISO, depending on if there's light pollution. That's kind of the formula. I know I went over that quick, but I talk about that in a lot of other places and very in depth in my Your First Milky Way Photo training. But really, it's formulaic. And every time you shoot, it's the same formula. So actually, you know, daytime photography, flash photography, event coverage, like all of those things, they're a lot harder. The variables are a lot more than at night, photographing the night sky. It's actually, I've had students who are like, I never even used my camera in manual before. And then they get out there and they can create these really stunning images of the Milky Way because it's so formulaic and they've learned the formula and they've learned the things that have to switch a little bit one way or the other. Like, for instance, with light pollution, if you have a lot of light pollution, your ISO has to come down. They've learned those pieces and they're able to get out there and create these images. And people are like, oh my gosh, you did that? And I'm like, yeah. And in doing that, and practicing and going out and shooting more, guess what? They've learned even more about their camera and doing it. But we don't have to be a master at these things before we get out and we start. So where do we start at? You know, I really want to emphasize the point. Things don't have to be perfect. We don't have to have perfect conditions all the time. Heck, you can even go out on a night when there's cloud. And as that Milky Way is peeking through, you can shoot it. You know, we don't need to have these sweeping, epic, beautiful locations. We don't need to know everything about our camera. We don't have to have everything, all the ducks lined up in a perfect row. You know, you have that one duck who's like, I don't know, I'm going to stay back here a little bit. You know, we just have to start. We just have to get in action and get going. With most things in life, once we get in action, it gives us momentum. And that momentum keeps us going forward. It helps us get over the inevitable roadblocks that come up. So my recommendation for starting is don't start alone. which is to say, to put a positive spin, is get help. So get help from a mentor, from someone who has done it before. And if you have someone, you know, in your local camera club, someone in your life who has done it, that's fantastic. If you're able to, classes are fantastic. And there's lots of different ways to take classes. So I have a fantastic online class that I run. I'll be opening registration after I do the free Your First Milky Way Photo training. And I highly recommend it. However, there are other classes too. You know, you'll have local classes that you can do, workshops that you can do. I would recommend knowing a bit about how you learn and how you retain information. I actually personally think that having access to something like an online class is fantastic for starting learning. And then doing in-person after that is the thing that can deepen the learning. I can't tell you how many of my students start with my Milky Way class, and then they go and they start taking workshops after, and they start retaining more. Now, for some of us, classes are maybe not going to be an option just because financially it's not something that is a priority currently in our life, you know? And I get that with all of the rising costs and things that exist. It would be lovely sometimes to invest in a class and get that really detailed help and support and community that comes from it. But other times it's like, yeah, but I also have to pay my mortgage and buy food. And that costs a heck of a lot now in 2024 than it did even a few years ago. So then there's looking for the resources. This podcast is a great resource. I would love to be able to mentor everyone who I come across. I would love to, but I would have to clone myself or just not have a family and not sleep. And even then, it probably still wouldn't be enough. That's why I create this podcast. That's the whole reason. It's to be able to help more people at scale without burning myself out. And it allows me to be the mentor to a lot of people and do it in a way that's free of cost to people. And that is something it's a core tenet in kind of the business that I wanted to build, is to be able to help people at scale in a way that works for both me and for those people. So, you know, if you're new to the podcast, there's a lot of episodes on here that have a lot of things that can help you move forward. If you're a longtime listener, you probably also have gone back and listened to other episodes when I've taken a break or taken a few weeks off here or there. And so I appreciate you for doing that. I am the type of person who I will go back and listen again and again to things that have helped me, because as I grow and learn, I'm not the same person listening to the episode again. And so I find new pieces, which is always exciting. So that's my first thing that I'm really going to recommend, is that you find some type of support. Don't try and just go it alone. You can. It's a lot more frustrating. It's a lot better to have support and guidance going through. My next piece is, how do you actually fit this into your life? If this is a new type of photography for you, you will find that this is a type of photography that's a little bit demanding. You know, it's not like macro photography of flora and fauna in your yard. There's always something out there that you can shoot. You know, in the fall, it's dead dried leaves, or it's, you know, the more colorful leaves. In the winter, it's frost on the edges of a tree. In the summer, it's all of the things. In the summer, you know, I guess I skipped over spring, didn't I? In spring, it's all the mud that your kids are in. Wait, no, I mean, it is the beautiful buds that are forming, and the trees and the crocuses and the things that are starting to bloom. There's lots of things, and it's generally always kind of right there for you, depending on where you live. But night photography for most of us is a wee bit more demanding. It means that we have to drive somewhere. It means that we have to be up in the middle of the night. you know, there tends to be a commute and there tends to be very odd hours that we don't normally keep. Some of us here might, some of us who work on back shift, maybe that's normal for us. But I know a lot of back shift people try to get on a normal day shift on their days off so that they can, you know, do things like go to the bank and other things that are needed to be done during the day. So in that way, night photography is demanding and it is not a natural fit. You know, it's not a hobby like knitting where you can just sit and knit anywhere. You can knit on an airplane, on the subway. You can knit in the doctor's office. You can knit in front of the TV. You can knit anywhere you can sit. That rhymes. I've been reading too much Dr. Seuss lately. I apologize. So for night photography, then we actually have to actively figure out how to fit it into our life. And that will be different for all of us. For myself, during the new moon cycle, I don't book things. I don't do Q&A calls inside my Shoot to Sell Society. I don't do critique calls inside my Milky Way class. Like, I'm not booking anything during those 2 weeks. I don't book things. My schedule is clear. Now, do I have work to do? Yeah, sure. I always have work to do. I have a list as long as going across the earth and back. Maybe it's not that long. I've got a long list of things that are always there to do, but I make sure that I don't actively have to be on any type of meeting, any type of Zoom call, anything where I have any appointment early in the morning. It does not exist during those times, except for in exceptional circumstances, wherein then I have also planned for that. So why do I do that? I do that so if it's a clear night, I can get my butt out and I can shoot. Other things too, you know, I know that this time of the year, start of the year, I have to get up between 1 and 2 in the morning and then drive a couple hours and then shoot. I am not going to be able to pull an all-nighter and do that. I can't. At my age, it is just not an option. It's not anymore. And that could also be, you know, the severe sleep deprivation that comes with having small children and just the years and years of living in a sleep deprived state. But I don't pull all-nighters anymore. That's not a thing. So I know that after my kids are in bed, if it's a clear night, I get myself to bed. I do whatever I need to do to be in bed and asleep at 8 o'clock so I can sleep for 4 hours or even 5 hours before I get up and go. Now, I know some people are like, I can't do that. This is not part of me. And that's fine. We're all different. You have to figure out whatever it is that you need to do in order to make it fit. And maybe it's that, you know, during this time of year, based on when the Milky Way is up, maybe it only works if you can go and stay overnight somewhere that has easy access to a place and you can just get up an hour or two before sunrise and you have an early start to your day. You know, maybe that's how it works out. It all depends. So we actually have to think about this. We have to put some thought and planning into it. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen. It's a barrier to it actually happening. Maybe it only fits into our life when we're on vacation or on weekends. And if that's the case, then we need to make sure that outside of vacation and weekends, we're doing everything we can in order to be able to facilitate when there is a clear night, either on weekends or vacations, that we can get out and shoot. So that means learning about our gear, practicing shooting, practicing editing, going and location scouting, or spending time scouting online, reaching out to people to talk to who have been there, all of those kinds of things. Finding those pieces so that it can fit into our life. It is not going to fit neatly into our life. It's just not going to. So we need to figure out how to put that square peg in the round hole. And it might mean that we've got to do a little bit of work beforehand and get out the saw and saw off the edges of things and glue them back in a different way so that it fits. Hopefully you're picking up what I'm putting down here with my metaphor. Okay, so we need to get help. We need to have help in some way. Then we need to actually actively figure out how it fits in our life. Okay, now, this is the last bit. This is the piece that I'm probably the most excited to talk about on the podcast today, because this is what keeps us going with it. Now, this type of photography might not be for everyone. And some people might start it and then they might just be like, oh, this is not a priority anymore. You know, I've started many a hobby and then not continued on that hobby after doing it for a little while. That's okay. There's no shade being thrown here. What I will say is that I can speak from personal experience and the experience of teaching thousands of photographers and getting to follow along on their journey and learn about the images they're creating and why it's so important to them, that this genre of photography, this hobby, this subject matter that we put in front of our camera can be exceptionally transformative to our life. However, we don't get to that point if we don't keep doing it. And it can be hard to keep doing it. I think I speak for most people when I say sleep is nice. I like sleeping. I particularly enjoy being snuggled up in my bed and sleeping. Now, I know for some of us, sleep is harder to get than others, but most people, I think, would agree. Sleep is pretty great. And when we do this type of photography, guess what? We get less sleep. Now, maybe we can make up that sleep, but maybe we don't. We get less sleep. We get pushed out of our comfort zone, quite literally. We have to plan more. We have to learn about technical things. We have to do the dance with Photoshop and figure out how to put all of these things together. We go out and shoot and wonder if that noise in the bushes is something that's coming to eat us. You know, there's so many, many steps along the way that push us back and say, just stay home. And it just feels easy to stay home, right? It would be a lot easier to stay home, but then we would miss out. And so what gets us out? What keeps us doing it? Well, remember when I said go with a friend? If you have someone else going, that's a really good way to do it. But you can't always rely on other people. Other people can be there to help us. But as with most things, it needs to come from within. It's not from without, it's from within. And with Milky Way photography and night sky photography, for me, the thing that I see people keep going with is when they find the meaning. When you define why are you doing it? What does it actually give you? I know when I first started out, it was the technical challenge. It was like, whoa, this is hard. I haven't done anything hard in photography for a really long time. And I don't want to come across as cocky here. I was working as a professional photographer for quite a while and I have a degree in photography, you know, so everything that I kind of did, you know, there were little challenges here or there. There were lighting challenges in the studio. You know, sometimes we would get a brand new product in and it would have different characteristics. And so there were some fun lighting challenges to get it to look its best. But for the most part, stuff was kind of easy. And so then I came across this Milky Way photography and I was like really bad. I was really bad at it when I started. And for me, that was the thing that kept me going when I started. But then I realized that there was more and that I wanted to keep doing it even after I got good at it, even after I figured out all of those technical challenges. And when I decided that I was going to start teaching it full time, that's when I had to actually dig into this, because it's funny, as people are like, you know, those who can do and those who can't teach. Well, those people probably haven't taught very much, because when you teach something, you really have to identify everything about that process and also be very clear on why it is you're doing something. And so I took this like a job where I sat it down and I started to list out all of the reasons why. What does going out and photographing the Milky Way give me? And so I literally started to write these things down. I was like, okay, I was quiet at night. I was like, my house is like a zoo. How did two small people make so much noise? You know, I know they're just like figuring out their bodies and their capabilities, and I guess that's part of it. The vocal cords are part of it. But so loud. Night is quiet. That's really nice, isn't it? So that was one. And then, you know, okay, I have space to think. During the day, I have to do all of the things that need to be done, okay, to run the business, to run the household, to help the kids, to continue my relationship with my husband, to be a daughter, to be a sister, to be a friend, all of these things, everything, in and out and in and out and all of it, all of it. But at night, I have space. My brain has space to think. Then those are kind of easy things, right? Another easy thing too, like it's really beautiful. It's really beautiful. You know, I get to go on hikes in places that I love to go here in Nova Scotia. Some of them are these epic, beautiful things, and others are just really nice little hikes that I like to do where you go through the woods and you sit in a clearing and that type of thing. And now I get to do that and have a different experience. And I talk about this, something I talk about all the time, but you know, at night, our eyes are working at a severely reduced capacity to during the day. And so that primary sensory input, our visual sensory input, is working at this reduced capacity. And it means that we get to have this really, really interesting interaction and experience with the landscape around us. So that's really cool too. So those are some solid reasons. But then it was even more. Now, some of these will resonate with you. Some of them might not. This is the thing. This is what it was for me. I want you to start thinking about this for you. And so more for me was I would sit there and I'd look up at the stars and I'd have these ideas like, you know, these stars have been here for the entirety of civilization as I know it. And the stars are still here, the same stars that my ancestors looked at, the same stars that my grandchildren and great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren will look at if my family is blessed to have that. I can look into all of these things, right? I'm photographing galaxies, other galaxies, galaxies that have just as many places that are in the Milky Way. All of these stars have the ability to be the sun for another planet. Like all of these thoughts, you get into some deep stuff in the middle of the night when it's just you and your brain and this beautiful, epic symphony in the sky above you. And so I started to think to myself about what I was getting out of going out and shooting. And it ends up to be so much more. And I could and have gone on these tangents of what Milky Way photography does. I would recommend to you to start to think about what you get out of it. And I know, you know, some students tell me that they feel as though it takes them closer to the creator. It feels as though it takes them closer to source. They feel connected with their ancestors. They feel connected with people who are gone. There's so many reasons that we can get a lot out of this type of photography. However, we need to, again, this is a theme that I tend to have. We need to put in the work to think about it, to identify it. It's not just about being like, yeah, all of those same things that you said, Christine. Maybe. But maybe not. What actually resonates with you? What are thoughts that you have had? What is your experience? And then as we start to think about that more, we start to then understand it more when we're out. When we can actually identify something, when we can name it, when we can shine a spotlight on it, all of a sudden, then we can have that experience much more deeply the next time that we go. And why do I think this is so important? Why is this the thing that I'm ending on with this episode? Because it is the thing ultimately that will keep you going. You know, getting a beautiful shot that you post on the internet and other people say it's great and it gives you that dopamine hit. Yeah, that's great. But you know what? Milky Way photography, sometimes you get nothing when you're out there. absolutely nothing. Sometimes it's one image. You come away with one image for the entirety of the night. You'd be out shooting 8 hours. You might only get one image. Maybe you might get like 5 to 10, but you might only get one. Not a lot of genres where you put in that amount of time to get such little output. So it's about more. In order to keep doing it, in order to show up, in order to go out, it becomes about more. And it's whatever that more is for you. So that would be my final takeaway for you today, is to spend some time thinking about that. And you know, if you're like, I haven't really spent much time out photographing the stairs, well, there's a good chance if you want to, you have spent time out on the stairs, maybe as a kid, maybe camping as a grown up or as a kid. There have been times when you have spent time out under the stars. Think about that a little bit more. Think about experiences that you've had growing up. All of those pieces, I could have a million thoughts in my head. I'm like, I could share this. I don't need to share more of my own personal examples with you. At this point, I want you to take some time and think about your own. And these things, I know today wasn't like I want you to learn this XYZ thing and do this technique and do this thing and you need these things. I did, however, reference you, and it's in the show notes, multiple episodes. You can go and listen to that. But this episode is more so has been the things that will actually make the difference, the things that will actually get you to keep going out and keep creating. I know the world that we live in. I know that we're not always going to be able to prioritize our creativity and spend time on a hobby or on creation. But if we take the time to think about the things I talked about in today's episode and to plan and prepare, we're that much more likely to be able to make that time and get out and shoot. And ultimately, like, my whole goal with everything I do in my educational portion of my business, it's just around getting more people out and creating and sharing their work. There's so much that exists in the world right now that is just not stellar, to put it mildly, that if we can be creating and putting our good out into the world, it's needed. Let's just put it that way. It's needed. And the more points that I can personally reach and I can help with, I see you as like a dot on the globe. And I actually visualize this sometimes. I really enjoy visualization, but I just envision this ripple effect of what you taking action can have and the effect that you get to have on all of these people. And then the effect that your effect can then go out and multiply and spread. And so that's what I want. I want you to be able to engage in this genre. I want you to be able to create and to share those creations. And I hope that today has helped with that. And I would love, if the podcast resonates, I'd love for you to let us know. Let me know in the Facebook group. It's always linked in here. I only have one ongoing free Facebook group. It's for the podcast. And also, if you haven't, one thing that helps me reach more people that is zero cost to you is to give the podcast a review. You can leave up to 5 stars on Apple and actually write out a review on Apple podcasts. You can also leave an up to 5-star review on Spotify as well. And that type of thing tells other people that I'm legitimate and that I'm not going to waste their time with my hour-long episode. So that would be something that would help as well. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here. I appreciate you so much. I'm so happy to have you here. And I'm honored that I get to play a small part in you getting out and under the stars.